Welcome back into Sports Talk, entering hour number three, the 6 o'clock hour. We're going to be starting our trip around the NFC South at 6:30. First off, though, going to talk about some other sports going on right now besides Saints football, as we're pretty excited, though, for OTA media viewing tomorrow afternoon. We'll have all that broken down for you afterwards on the show. On Thursday, but right now I want to look at the SEC tournament baseball scoreboard. Getting some games in today after that Texas A&M Mississippi State matchup was postponed yesterday. They picked things back up early today, and A&M came out and just throttled the Bulldogs 9-0 in that matchup. Also, the other final from today, Tennessee and Alabama ended up in a 15-10 final with the Vols winning. But Cullen, you were telling me it's not even as close as it looked.
It was top of the ninth, and Tennessee went into the ninth 15-6. Bama tried to make a comeback, scored four in the top of the ninth, just wasn't enough.
Good effort, good try for Alabama right there. They're knocked out, though, so Tennessee moves on. And right now we're in the top of the second inning of the third game of the day in Hoover, and that is Georgia with taking on Oklahoma. Right now, like I mentioned, top of the second, and it is scoreless. Meanwhile, the final game of this evening will be Florida taking on Ole Miss. You have the bracket in front of you, Cullen. How are things shaking out right now?
Yes, the Tennessee game puts them in game 9 tomorrow at 3 p.m. I believe that's the second game of the day, because Thursday was going to have two games, but the dominoes fell when last night one game got postponed, got pushed back to today. So then everything kind of got moved back a slot, at least everything up until Thursday. Friday, I believe, is still unchanged. So tomorrow, instead of there being two games, there are three games. The very first game at noon is the most important one for the Tigers. You will have Auburn playing Texas A&M. The winner of that will play LSU on Friday night, 6:30. You can hear it right here on WWL. But the first game after that will be Texas and Tennessee. And then after that, it will be Vandy versus the winner of the Oklahoma-Georgia game. And that will be closing Thursday out probably, 6, 7, 8 p.m. at night.
So, we're still waiting to find out now from Texas A&M versus Auburn. That winner will advance to take on the Tigers, and we'll have that game for you Friday right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Scheduled tentatively right now for a 6:30 first pitch on Friday, 6 o'clock pregame coverage would start. But we'll see how things shake out with the earlier game on Friday, which is a 3 o'clock start between the winner of Arkansas taking on the winner of the Ole Miss Florida matchup.
Yes, that's kind of important. If you believe that the Tigers are going to win Friday night, regardless of who their current opponent is, because we don't know, you are going to want to keep an eye on the late game tonight, because the winner of that game will then play Arkansas, and the winner of that game would then play LSU or Auburn or Texas A&M.
Yeah, looking over at the NBA playoff action, woo-wee, game one of the Western Conference Finals. Started out a tight matchup early on, and then, boy, oh boy, the Thunder put the pedal to the metal.
Yeah, 70-40 in that second half.
Obliterated the T-Wolves, 114-88. Not a good showing for Minnesota in that opening matchup, and we kind of talked a little bit about the atmosphere and fans wearing all the same T-shirts, but I knew OKC would be rocking it. Just that's one venue I'd love to visit for playoff basketball, OKC, just to feel that intensity there.
There were actually concerns I had about OKC's quick turnaround, because the Western Conference Finals started before the Eastern Conference Finals, but yet the Western Conference Finals semifinal game between OKC and Denver went to game seven. So OKC was kind of on like a tight timetable to get back to it. So I wasn't too surprised that the Timberwolves came out with a hot start. I am very surprised that OKC was able to kind of claw back, but then they didn't just like claw back and started standing on their own 2 feet. They beat the crap out of the Timberwolves in the second half.
Yeah, it's when a game gets like that, it's almost like disappointing to tune into, because you knew that wasn't that fourth quarter. I was just waiting for those final seconds to take off.
No, because you had what? The Timberwolves had a 4-point lead at halftime, and then you get blown out in the third quarter, 32-18, and you kind of like you hobble into the final 12 minutes down by a ton. It's not enough to kind of wrap it up and sit people, but it's also kind of too much to have some realistic chances of hope. It was a weird situation, and obviously OKC kind of just kept going.
We head over to the Big Apple tonight for game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. The New York Knicks hosting the Indiana Pacers. The Knicks 51-31 on the season against a Pacers squad that went 50-32. The Knicks in this matchup, a 4.5-point favorite at home.
I'll take it.
Not too steep of a line right there.
No, not too steep of a line. I'll take it. I mentioned in the Sports Flash, it's a series that a lot of people from the 90s, before my time, that has been pointed out and will continue to be pointed out
right,
to me.
Young whippersnapper.
That is a series that will bring back a lot of memories for a lot of people. Not for me, but I'm excited to see where this one goes.
Yeah, Jalen Brunson, Tyrese Halliburton, there's going to be some interesting action going on tonight. And just the Knicks atmosphere in Madison Square Garden, I'm sure, is going to be just as amped up as you saw that OKC crowd.
We were talking about this last night. Has your opinion changed at all with regards to how many games you think these series will go? We talked about how, like, the expectation across many people is that these are going to be both of these finals for each, the Western Conference, they're going to go deep. This is going to be a 6 or 7-game series for each.
Yeah, we mentioned that we kind of felt that this Knicks-Pacers matchup was a little more even than OKC versus Minnesota. And, yeah, I mean, we were saying at least we expected the series to go 6 in the West. I'm not so confident anymore of how I'm standing on that.
I think I'm still 6 in the West. I'd say if it goes the distance, the Timberwolves can do it. I will not. I don't think the Timberwolves are going to turn around like a 5-1.
I didn't think they were going to get bludgeoned the way they were. I didn't expect OKC to lose last night, but I didn't think they were going to be so dominant.
you take it at face value. You take it at face value, but the one thing I'm not taking at face value, something we've not talked about too much, it was a huge contention this entire season, the MVP award. SGA wins it earlier today.
Yeah.
Charlie and I were texting. The man can't take a vacation, apparently. We were texting about the contract that SGA might be due now because he has this kind of award in his back pocket. And the numbers shake out where before he won the MVP, I want to say it was like 5-year, 289 or 98 mil, just shy of 300. When the MVP pushes him to the likelihood of if he waits till next offseason to sign something, if he doesn't do something immediately this upcoming year, if he waits a year, it's rumored 5 years, $380 million contract.
Ooh, my Lord.
And I texted Charlie and I was like, we are absolutely going to see a 5-year, $500 million contract, not within our lifetimes, probably within the next decade.
So Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, now the third player in Thunder franchise history to win an MVP award. He joins Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook.
Mm-hmm. Well, while you look at the Thunder, well, how they play defense, the NBA defense.
Thunder.
No, you know why you should hope if you're a Pelicans fan? You should hope like Indiana.
That's the model right there of how they did it.
Listen, exactly. Oklahoma City Thunder or the Indiana Pacers. Don't cheer for the damn Knicks if you're a small market team. No, you want the Indiana. Now, Minnesota also, you look at the T-Wolves, you don't think of like L.A., Chicago, New York, whatever. But I'm telling you, they might not like it, whatever, but I would like a Pacers-Thunder championship. Because it gives hope to like a smaller market like New Orleans, Memphis, whatever. You do it right, you can win. You can win. Look, how many players you see that was here in New Orleans? Well, look at Randall.
Right.
With the T-Wolves. So how many players? There's like 6 or 7 of them. It didn't work out here. It's almost like the Saints do. It's like they go somewhere else, like Caden Ellis or Zach Bond, and they kick ass. There's too many examples of that.
That's what I worry about happening with Zion.
Oh, that could happen if he stays healthy. Because Zion was awesome in a Pel's uniform when he's healthy. What is he all of a sudden going to be healthy? Hopefully Joe Dumars can push the right buttons and motivate Zion. It's not off. There's no offseason for you right now.
Right.
Because you've had enough money. You've been well compensated. You should take the approach like an old man like LeBron James. Have someone with you 24/7 and we training so that you play the whole season. How can LeBron play all those games and Zion can't? I mean, I don't know, your body makeup and all that comes into play. Zion, I don't know what's going to happen with Joe Dumars, but that's a player, well-respected. I know Joe Dumars from Natchitoches. I went to school at Northwestern State. I mean, I remember him like when he was like a 15-year-old and stuff. I mean, he was unbelievable. So I don't know why he left Northwestern. He ended up, I mean, that'd be a story to even. We got to get him on, interview him. Like, why did you go to McNeese? He led the nation in scoring at McNeese State. And the Zion should trust that individual because he won a championship as a player with the Pistons and as a general manager. So Zion, okay, enough's enough. I know you might want to be your own man, and who's influencing you? Joe Dumars needs to influence Zion where you can hold him accountable and, you know, just play. Zion is unbelievable when he plays, but he's hell when he's well. How many times he's hell when he's well, but how can you keep him well and stuff? So I don't know, body
That's
type.
That's the magic question for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that might be the magic question, but but yeah, I think that's why if you're a basketball fan and we have an NBA team here in New Orleans with the Pelicans, you should cheer for Oklahoma City and Indiana. Because the small market team is a perfect example, small markets to win an NBA championship.
Colin, what do you want to say?
Even with the fact that the Bobby, like, who are you rooting for? We talked about it at length. None of these teams have won in a very long time, with the Timberwolves and the Pacers having never won in the NBA.
Yeah, anybody but the Knicks. If the Knicks win, that's all you hear, because it's New York. It'd be like the damn Steve, your damn Yankees. You let the Yankees win. You know, the one thing now, the Giants have won. The Giants have won a Super Bowl. You let the Jets win the Super Bowl? Oh, my God. Listen, because they haven't done it. The Yankees, you know, their expectations are there.
Knicks fans right now are feeling themselves.
Yeah, without a doubt. That's why I'm cheering for the Pages. You know, the Reggie Miller, you know, you're going way back in the history there.
I was telling Cullen, I just have this anger, and I despise the OKC Thunder, and I think it's more.
So why is that,
Steve? I think it's more I'm just jealous of the way they've been able to build this franchise.
Well,
I'm hoping that the Pelicans can achieve that.
Well, they got the right general manager, and you look at OKC, that's kind of like, remember Chris Paul, that's like the Katrina team.
Yeah.
You remember, you're going way back, you know, 20 years, whatever. But no, small market, high embrace. You know who's a virgin? Now they got spanked by the Florida Panthers, NHL team. Yeah, you look at a Carolina Hurricane. They're not in Charlotte. They're in Raleigh, where North Carolina State is. Raleigh, North Carolina. Look how much they backed. It's a small market.
Yeah.
How they backed that team, the whole North Carolina region. No. The Pels, you don't have to worry about no damn promotion. I told you this. If the team wins, I mean, everybody, you could be sitting in the nosebleeds. You ain't getting no, like Jimmy would say, you ain't getting no $5 or $2 tickets. The demand would be there, but you got to win. You have to have a product out there, and it can't be done. That's why I cheer for like the Oklahoma City Thunder or even the Pacers. But Indiana's basketball country, so.
We got that Pacers-Knicks game. That's a 7 o'clock tip-off tonight. Definitely be tuned into that. We gave you the SEC scoreboard. Waiting to find out now who's going to be taking on those LSU Tigers. The Auburn taking on Texas A&M tomorrow. That matchup, the winner will advance to Friday's game against LSU, which you can hear right here on WWL on Friday, 6:30. A predicted first pitch. We'll see how that ends up shaking out. When we get back from the break, more Saints talk, so stay tuned right after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, we're going around the NFC South now. First, checking in with those Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They've won the division back-to-back-to-back-to-back. Four straight seasons, helping us break down the Bucs. J.C. Allen, Tampa Bay reporter for Bucs Game Day and host of the sick podcast, Pirate Parlay. J.C., always appreciate the time. How you been doing, man?
Good, you know, just we're in that spot where it's starting to wind down, but not really because we have camps left and the draft and everything, but staying busy.
Now, JC, everyone looks like in the NFC South, okay, we got to affect the opposing quarterback with an edge rusher, whether it was Carolina and the Saints or the Bucs, and then looking at the Falcons, what they did in that first round, they definitely influenced or went after that edge rusher. So where is Tampa Bay at with that? As far as, you know, wanting to affect the opposing quarterback because, Diaby, if I'm pronouncing that right. A premium pass rusher, but is that something that they address and looking forward to for this upcoming season to try and five-peat?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think every every team would tell you they want another pass rusher, and the Bucks were one that were very open about it. They went and they actually, as the clock struck noon on the tampering day, they signed Hassan Reddick, who's coming off a down season with the Jets, but that had a lot to do with more contract situation, and then obviously we saw what happened with the Jets after the season. But they're hoping that he can get back to his ways, double-digit sack. He's got Larry Foote, who was his coach when he was so productive with the Cardinals. So they're, you know, he's hungry. He's, as they say, PO'd, and he's ready to prove that, you know, he's still the same guy. He's a guy who, before last season, had four straight seasons of double-digit sacks, and through that time period led all edge rushers and strip sacks. So they have him, they have Diaby, they invested a second-round pick in Braswell last year, and they're really excited about his future. And they also have Anthony Nelson, who they signed, who's just their steady Eddie kind of do-it-all guy. Made a huge play against the Panthers in overtime that kept them in the playoffs last year. And then they drafted David Walker in the fourth round. And this guy is, you know, he comes from this small school playing, you know, not great competition. He's the best athlete on the field when you watch him, though, which is what you look for. And got invited to the Senior Bowl late and really showed that he could go up against the top competition in the draft and not only hold his own, but straight up bully some of those guys. So they're really excited about having him on this team too. And, you know, that's the name of the game, affect the quarterback, and it slows down the offense. So I think everyone's trying to add that in that NFC South division.
You know, JC, to stay on the defensive side, I've always been an unbelievable fan of his. Levante David, to me, he played like a 24-year-old in 2024. Now he turned 35 in January. What's his status? And then you look at the heart of the defense, where they are in the linebacker position. Address that. Levante David, has one more left in the tank, so to speak? Or where are they at with the linebacker position?
Yeah, I don't expect a big drop-off from Levante just because he's so smart and instinctive and watches so much film. He knows what plays and diagnoses, you know, the defense, what the offense is trying to do so quickly to put him in positions. And, you know, he has fallen off a little bit in coverage, lost a step. You know, he's still a productive coverage player, but he's not going to one-on-one the Travis Kelce's of the world anymore, but can still be productive in that role. So they found, you know, a different way to use him as a blitzer last year. I had 5.5 sacks. I think he was tied for second most on the team. And, you know, that is the spot where the Bucs wanted to get better. They felt like they didn't have great depth last season, mainly because their penciled-in starter right now, Servacio Dennis, went out, I think, in week 3 or 4 with a shoulder injury. And it's something that had been bothering him since college. He finally got that corrected. So they don't think it's going to be a concern going forward. But he's a guy who can do it all. You know, he's good in coverage. He can rush the passer. He's good against the run. So they're really hoping on him staying healthy and taking a big step in his development. But they also signed Anthony Walker in free agency. And he's been a better coverage guy than a run support guy. But he's been a plus. And he's been a starter in this league wherever he's gone, really. So, you know, they feel like they've improved the depth. A lot of Bucks fans wanted them to address it in the draft. Jahad Campbell, you know, Demetrius Knight, Carson Schwechsler, a lot of those guys didn't get to them. Jahad Campbell, obviously, with medical concerns. But there is concern there, even with the signing of Anthony Walker. They have old Deion Jones floating around there back from the Atlanta days.
Yep.
But it is a concern. I think it's probably the biggest concern on the defense right now is the linebacker. Can Servacio be an every down linebacker? And can he stay healthy, most importantly? And then do they have enough depth there? It's a team that I would certainly be on the lookout if there's any pre-training camp or you know, final cutdown linebackers that come available. They feel like they can improve the floor, that fourth spot on the team. I think they'll take a look at it.
Now, JC, looking at the offensive line, obviously Graham Barton, the center. You know, a lot of concerns, I guess, like the Saints. You look in the interior, left guard, right guard, the center position. And right. Looking at the left guard, a lot like the Saints. What are their considerations? What are they doing going forward with that position?
Yeah, so they're set. They re-signed Ben Bredesen in free agency to a 3-year, I think, $21.5 million deal. So they got him on a real discount compared to what some of the other starters had got. And Bredesen's always been a good player. His problem was, especially, you know, the year prior when he was with the Giants, he was playing left guard, right guard, center. He hasn't really had stability. So to be able to settle in at one position and kind of master that position with the Bucs was really beneficial for him. Still the weak link on the line, though, but Tristan Wirfs, That's all I have to say about him. And Luke Goedeke is probably a top three or top five, definitely top five, if not top three right tackle in the league. If you really watch him and what he's able to do to shut down some of the most, elite pass rushers, it's really fun to watch him. Cody Mock grew by leaps and bounds last year at right guard and is poised to take another step in the right direction. And then Graham Barton, moving from college tackle to center, there were some ups and downs, but there were a lot of ups, and a lot of the reason the Bucs had so much success in the running game was because of Graham Barton. As he settles in now in his year two and has a full offseason to actually work on his body and his position and not underwear drills and pro days of the combine, I think that'll help him tremendously, especially lifting with guys like Luke and Tristan. They lift crazy, crazy weight. And just settling in as a pass protector, I think he'll be better. So continuity across the line is great for the running game, great for the quarterback, great for the team as a whole. And they made sure they did that. They made some minor moves, in free agency, signing a backup swing tackle in Charlie Heck. And, they lost Robert Hainsey to the Jags to be their starting center. But they've got some guys they're comfortable with, and we'll see. They brought some intriguing undrafted free agents as well. We'll see who has a chance to crack the roster there.
Now, JC, it seems like across the NFC South, look at the secondary. Everyone has cornerback, questions, whether it be depth or who's starting and who's going to win the job. Where do you look at the Bucs at right now? Jamal Dean, it seems like he simply can't stay healthy. And, lack of depth exposed, by the injuries. Zion McCollum. So where are they at in that regard with the cornerback? And then I look at safety. I've always been an Antoine Winfield, a junior fan. But the Bucs, I still think they need a long-term upgrade at the other safety spot. So, you can't be strong in every area. You're going to have liabilities. But, like I said, the whole NFC South, they all got cornerback questions. But where are the Bucs at as far as their secondary?
Yeah, I think they view Zion McCollum as a true number one shutdown type of guy in this league. And just seeing his growth and development over the years from, year one where he was almost unplayable to now, it's easy to see why they believe that. He's, got the prototypical everything you look for in a cornerback. A lot of last season, his play started off really, really strong, and then it kind of tailed out. But a lot of that was due to injuries, too. He was playing with a different nickel back next to him, a different high safety or a different corner on the other side. And it's difficult to find your rhythm when you're having to communicate with other people, and they might not be as at the talent level as you are. So it kind of exposes you, and it minimizes your chance to take those risks and because you have a reliable safety over the top. But he's penciled in as the number one. He probably gets a contract extension this year or before free agency next year. Jamal Dean is just exactly what you said. He can't stay healthy, and that's why the Bucs attacked the position so heavily on day two of the draft in Benjamin Morrison and Jacob Parrish with their two rookie draft picks, because they didn't like what happened last year, and that was injuries hit, and they had to throw special teamers and undrafted free agency guys in there, and their depth wasn't it looked strong at first, but season-ending injuries in week one to Bryce Hall, who they re-signed this season, they kind of decimated the room. So Jamal Dean is the starter for now. Benjamin Morrison is working his way back from that hip surgery he had last season in college. But, Jacob Parrish has really lit it up and looked really, really strong so far just through rookie minicamps and been glowed about during, phase two. Made two pick sixes in his rookie minicamp debut. So he profiles to compete for that nickel, but Tom Bowles says he likes him outside too. So Jamal Dean will have some competition there for sure. Everyone's competing, but his ability to not get turnovers, he gets a million pass deflections but can't hold on to the ball, is going to put his job in jeopardy if one of these guys are ready to go. As far as safety, Antoine Winfield's penciled in, and when you look at a lot of depth charts, you look at it's Tyke Smith there at corner, but really the Bucs are moving him from nickel cornerback to their strong safety this season. He's one of these versatile guys that can play free, strong, and play the nickel position, like Antoine Winfield Jr. So they've got some versatility in that back end to move things around. The question becomes, if a guy like Jacob Parrish, their third-round rookie, wins a cornerback spot, now you have Christian Izian, who took that spot over a little bit last year and was their starter the year before. Now you have him in a rover role who can play multiple positions. And, that fourth safety, fifth safety spot is up for battles. A guy like Kayvon Merriweather, maybe a Shiloh Sanders could come away with that spot. So it'll be interesting to see come training camp.
And Josh, I'm curious, JC, what can you tell us about Josh Grizzard, the new offensive coordinator for the Bucks? Four straight seasons this Tampa team's dealing with a new OC in charge.
Yeah, I mean, continuity is the biggest thing it brings, right? He's not changing the scheme, changing everything. There's new verbiage, obviously, but, you know, that comes with almost every season. There's some new verbiage, and there's definitely, he's going to put his wrinkle on it, but pretty much what you saw last year is the same offense is typically going to be run. There will be different ways he calls things and stuff like that, as every offensive coordinator is different, but you know, the Bucks are really high on him. You talk to any of the guys, whether it's in a professional setting or a personal private setting, and they've got nothing but great things to say about him. They're super excited. He brings a lot of energy to the room. They're hoping he doesn't leave. So we'll see if that works out. But you go back to where he learned from. Obviously, he was with Liam Cohen last year, and that was huge for, you know, his development in that McVay-style system. But he comes from that Shanahan system, too, with Mike McDaniels down there. But he's also had, you know, four other OCs come through, and Chan Gailey, and Brian Flores, coach, part of the Brian Flores coaching staff, and they just kept him around because he was such a useful part of the organization. So, you know, he's going to come in, and you know, he's going to have his lumps. But what's really interesting is this training camp and OTAs, mini camp. They're going to be doing what's called call it periods. So usually during camp, you know, you'll go out there and you'll have some scripted sessions where I want to get looks at these guys doing this and executing this against this look, executing this against this play. But they'll go out there where it's pretty much a scrimmage. You know, Todd Bowles is calling the defense; he's calling the offense live as it goes, and that will help him get that feel of how to adjust his play calling versus certain looks. And, you know, Todd's going to throw the kitchen sink. And we know Todd has one of the most exotic defensive looks that he'll have Vita Vea off ball linebacker sometimes, you know. So, you know, it'll be very beneficial for him. And they've done that the past 2 years, actually, with Dave Canales and Liam Cohen. And you saw the level of success both of those first-time OCs in the NFL had.
Now, JC, before we let you run, the fan base, the Bucks fan base, is there hope? And they think Baker Mayfield is the guy to lead him to the promised land. You know, Tom Brady, all of a sudden, he comes in, he wins a championship. But how are they they confident in Baker Mayfield leading the way?
Yeah, I think for Baker, you know, from going from nobody wanted him, outcast, $4 million contract, to now you're replacing the greatest football player of all time in Tom Brady. He's really found himself and really fit right in. He defines Tampa Bay. He's a Florida man now through and through. And you know, I heard comedian Bert Kreischer, out of all people, was talking about Baker Mayfield and said, you know, Tampa's where nobody fits in. You know, he didn't fit in Cleveland. He didn't fit in Carolina. He didn't fit in, you know, and he came down here and he fits in. And as a transplant, it's right, you know. So the fans, the city, the team, everybody loves him. He's just one of these kind of guys that you feel like you can go out and get a beer with, and he does that with the offensive line. Tom Brady would never, or could never, really, because of his, you know, magnanimity. But and as far as that's the expectation this year, a lot of Bucks fans have that expectation is, hey, we have an offense that finished top five in rushing, top five in passing, top five in scoring. You know, we have a defense that, when healthy, is above average, and we added some really good pieces, we feel like, to that. And we have Baker Mayfield at the helm. And, you know, again, this team is already being counted out. You see national analysts have the Panthers winning. They have the Falcons winning. Sorry, no Saints yet, but you could probably imagine why. But, you know, it's a count us out. Count us out. Put a chip on our shoulder. I just did a story today, you know, PFF Football Focus came out with their quarterback rankings and had Baker below Brock Purdy and Geno Smith and even Jordan Love. And, you know, to me, it's like, you know, maybe Jordan Love I can see, but the other guys, you know, Baker has outperformed them over the last 2 years at the same time span they have. So,
you want a breakdown of the Bucks? Check out J.C. Allen. Always appreciate the time. Thanks so much, man.
All right, J.C., outstanding. Thank you.
Yeah, have a great one.
Tampa Bay Bucks reporter for Bucks Game Day, host of the Sick Podcast Pirate Parlay, J.C. Allen joining us there, taking a break. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this on WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk. Our trip around the NFC South will continue next hour with the Atlanta Falcons and Carolina Panthers, though. We are taking a moment of silence here for Indiana Colts owner Jim Irsay, getting the news he has passed away at the age of 65 that the Colts organization has announced. Rest in peace, Jim Irsay.
Well, that is somewhat shocking, but not shocking. It's shocking because he's only 65 years of age. I'll be 65 in August. I looked at that picture you showed me. He's kind of humped over. I don't know. But
yeah, you're looking good for almost 65.
Yeah, man. I think that's a lot of hard living. Think about it. He inherited the Colts from his dad. And the lifestyle.
Cullen's telling me he inherited.
Yeah, and the whole lifestyle. He was in the rock and roll. I think he collected these unbelievable guitars. I want to say like from Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck.
Probably Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Stevie Ray Vaughan. Jimmy Page and all.
Van Halen, maybe.
Yeah, all these guitar collections. So he lived a lifestyle like a rock and roller, and it will catch up to you. Remember when he got stopped? I don't want to speak ill of someone who passed away, but you remember when he got stopped? That guy covered up with the owners.
Money and pills, right?
Well, when he was in a nice country club, whatever, he had a whole like gym bag full of $1,000 of cash and like a bunch of pills, Oxycontin and all that. So, I mean, I don't know. You can go to rehab and all do all that. So I don't care if you're rich or poor. We're human beings. Y'all could be susceptible to that. And I'm shocked because of his age. But hard living could do that to you also.
Rest in peace, Jim Irsay. Owner of the Colts has passed away at the age 65. We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. Be back with more right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Looking at our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, Cajun Cannon. Seeing one of the questions here I want to pose to you. Bobby, which position on the Saints do you think is going to struggle the most this season?
Well, at the top of my head, it just came. I talked about this with Jeff Duncan. I got to see the cornerbacks. I don't know. I was a big—
Corner, not quarter.
No, corner.
Right.
My accent. Okay, my cornerback.
No, me too.
No, I was like a Lattimore fan, Paulson and Debo at times. Now, Alante Taylor even got benched. Now I think he's matured. He's handled some adversity. Pardon the pun, but I don't want to drink the Kool-Aid till he does something. Kool-Aid in the country. Okay, do something. I mean, considering where he was drafted, so I still have concerns with the cornerback position. Now, the cornerback who did not, who I'm high on, who we drafted, he did not practice in the rookie minicamp.
Quincy Riley.
I love that pick. But can he contribute from the get-go? Can he contribute at a high level? Because I think you can have that guy, the nickel. He could do more than one thing. But the best pass coverage is the pass rush. So hopefully we're getting a pass rush. I don't care if it's up the middle of the edge. Because I think we're going to have to help out the cornerbacks. Because I'd say right now that's my concern, the cornerback position.
No, I'm right with you at corner. Obviously, we don't have a lot of answers at the quarterback position either. But you can at least see some of those guys you're hoping to develop in a second-round pick in Tyler Shuck to be that dude. But, you got Alante Taylor, like you mentioned, Kool-Aid McKinstry. We'll see what he can do in year two. But definitely a big drop-off after that. I'm hoping Quincy Riley can do some stuff, but Ugo Amade, and look at some of the other guys like Ike Yiadom.
Isaac Yiadom, from Boston College, he went from the Saints to the 49ers and back to the Saints. Rico Payton from Pittsburgh State. Think about that. I think he's a St. Louis kid. Pittsburgh State's in Kansas. I mean, it's like all overachievers. So you look at Isaac Yiadom, Rico Payton. Who was the other one you had said?
Alante Taylor, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Quincy. We got Rajon Wright still.
No, it's a lot of guys.
Ugo Amadi.
Yeah, like Ugo Amadi. I mean, he's an overachiever. That's a special teams guy who could play nickel in the safety. But that's
depth. You're looking at your studs.
That's no starter. Come on.
No, you mentioned with the drop-off from now, no Marshawn and no Debo. That's pretty steep.
I'm telling you, as a quarterback, I'd like to go against that secondary. You better get a pass rush.
Heading to our news break. We'll be back with our Around the NFC South right after this. Stay tuned on WWL.